everybody, and welcome back to Don't Quit Your Day Job. This is Paul. It is April 1st, but doing April 1st stuff is really lame, I think, like on the internet. I'm here with Ryan Waltz of the band Horrorwood Ending. Ryan, what do you think of April Fool's Day and the silliness of people posting dumb stuff?
There's good humored ones and not good humored ones. You know, you just got to be careful with what you do.
What a good and mature response. Like anything, you got to be careful with what you do, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So we were just talking, Ryan and I, before we started recording, and it turns out we were in the same room a couple of weeks ago. My band from Germany played at the Kennel in West York, and Ryan happened to be there, but we didn't know each other at the time.
Correct.
So funny. And we're playing a show together in Pittsburgh in a couple of weeks, which we're going to talk about here. But before we get to any of that, Lancaster, Lankster.
There is a debate. I go over this every podcast because I've grown up here my entire life. I was born, you know, less than 2 miles away, but I still say it wrong, but only on stage, like, or only when I'm telling somebody else the name.
Okay.
But it is, as our drummer says, you got to say it like you're sneezing, like Lancaster. Like.
So why are there the two different pronunciations? Because obviously I'm in Western PA, but when people talk about Lancaster or Lancaster or whatever, there's always strong opinions about this. And if you're from that area your whole life, why? Who cares?
I think it's just, the name obviously comes from somewhere else, as everything in America does.
Right.
So I think it is Lancaster, if you break it down.
Right.
But the people that have bastardized it over the years turned it into Lancaster, and then they've grown up with it their whole lives. So then they'll fight to the death that what they're saying is correct, even though it's probably really not.
Right. And so let's talk about your band name for a minute. Horrorwood Ending. Horrorwood, when I tried to figure out if that meant anything, the only thing I could find was that metal band Ice Nine Kills, who did some Horrorwood stuff, right? So that's got to be pretty common for you.
So, yeah, we started the band in 2005. And it just comes from the phrase Hollywood ending, like your perfect ending, right. Your love story, the guy gets the girl, blah, blah, this, blah, blah, that. And then there's actually a song by the band called Balzac.
Okay. Yeah.
They have a song called Girl from Horrorwood. So as, you know, my high school self was trying to come up with band names, I really liked Hollywood Ending, but it was already taken. So we just took the Horrorwood Ending.
Okay.
And what's interesting about that is, like, when we were first coming up, there was a band called Hollywood Undead.
Right. I remember that, like, early 2000s, like, yeah. Screamo, rap, whatever.
Yeah, they were MySpace famous, you know.
Exactly, yes. Yes, that's a good way to put
and
it.
And so when we were starting, everyone confused us with Hollywood Undead. And then, you know, we took our, like, hiatus, our break or whatever. And then we come back and they're like, oh, Horrorwood, like that Ice Nine Kills album. And we're like, sure. Like.
Oh my gosh. But you stuck with it, and we're going to talk about the breakup and why. I mean, that's kind of the point of this whole podcast, is why we do what we do when it's very, very difficult to make any sort of substantial living out of it. But before we get to that point, so my band, as I mentioned, Doping the Void, we write a lot of songs about cryptids and monsters, and that's kind of our thing. It's easy to write those songs. I like those topics. I'm not the kind of guy that writes songs about, you know, my girlfriend or my wife or whatever. I've never been that sort of guy. And I've gotten questions about that. Does that pigeonhole us into, we write songs, Doping the Void write songs about cryptids. That's their thing. And they don't really do anything else, which isn't 100% true, but it's 98% true. So when you think about your band, do you feel like it's a similar thing? Because a lot of your themes are horror related, or or that sort of imagery?
Yeah. I mean, short answer is yeah, it does. There are times when you write stuff and you say, like, this doesn't fit. I have a whole folder of songs that, you know, they don't fit. And that's okay. But I always try. Well, when we first started writing, it was very much like, here's a horror movie, write a song.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Here's a horror movie, write a song. And then I heard a quote about in this genre, how writing songs just ends up feeling like a book report. Like you write a movie and then you write a book report about it. You watch a movie and then you write a song, which is your book report about it. And so then we wrote a whole album's worth and we recorded a whole album's worth of stuff that is that. And then when we went to write what would be our first real album, Waiting for a Heartbeat, it came out in 2011. I tried my best to use the imagery while being relatable to everybody else. I tried to take love songs about, you know, the undead, and that's kind of my way of using that as a, an undead is a person that is out of your life, or, you know, I try to use analogies right. with this stuff to make it more relatable, but it's mostly because I feel weird trying to write songs like, and being vulnerable in that way. And I feel like, if you have songs about cryptids, you're going to feel kind of the same way. You take a little bit of, this and a little bit of that. And, you try to be relatable without being vulnerable.
Yeah.
And that's what giving, and that's what writing songs in these type of genres gives you. You have ways of saying it, but not saying it.
Right. You're right. And you can work around it. Right. When you were starting out, none of us feel like, okay, I'm going to still be writing songs in 20 years, right? Everything is in the moment, especially when you're a kid. And as I mentioned, you have a pretty, in the 5 minutes we've been talking, it immediately strikes me that you have a pretty mature way of approaching things. So when you first started writing songs, you didn't have any idea that it would go on as long as it has, right? That you'd still be writing songs?
I mean, I always knew that I'd be writing songs. I didn't know I'd still be doing this band because I wrote songs long before I could play an instrument. Okay. I wrote songs long before I was in a band. It was just something I always did and always not very well, but, you know, it got by. But even when I was very, very young, I had notebooks with words in them and those were my songs. But no, I had no idea that Horrorwood Ending, the band I started when I was 17, we'd still be friends. We'd still be playing shows. We'd still be traveling. I'd still have to sit on podcasts and talk about lyrics that I wrote. And like, you know, it's really, I'm glad all those things happened. Everything happens for a reason. But yeah, I didn't think about that when you do it. Same thing when you name your band Horrorwood Ending when you're 17
right.
or 16 and then you're not 16 or 17 anymore. And every time someone says your band name, it's like with a, like they always pause in the middle. It's I laugh every time. Horrorwood Ending. Yep. That's the one.
So let's talk a little bit about the hiatus. So you did an album in 2011 called Waiting for a Heartbeat. I want to talk about the song Ready to Die, but we'll do that in a second. So Waiting for a Heartbeat in 2011, then you break up and then a decade passes, right?
Yeah.
Was that a natural breaking point? Was there a big fight where you all said fuck off to each other and went your separate ways, or what happened?
No, it was a natural thing. You know, like I said, the band started when we were in high school, we were teenagers. And then it was one of those things where we were always working on something. And I think the album is what kept us together as long as it kept us together. Mm-hmm. And then once that first album came out and we looked around and we had nothing else to work on, it was just kind of like, and we all hit that age where, you know, life starts taking over. Mm-hmm. And a guy gets serious with a girl, and then his weekends aren't free anymore. Right. And then your one practice a week turns into one practice a month, which turns into one practice every 3 months. I equate being in a band kind of like going to the gym. Like, if you don't stick to the schedule, then like you'll just forget and you'll just stop going. Yeah. Like it's something you have to practice. You have to stay on it every day.
Then when you broke up, I'm presuming you stayed in touch, you were friends. Mm-hmm. And was there a thought about, hey, do you want to get together and just jam? And so really that's a way to ask, how did it resurrect itself?
So throughout the years, we've always been playing music, either with other people, mm-hmm. or like those got me and just the drummer had another band, and then him and the bass player had a different band. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we've always been playing music, and it was one of those things that like through having an early internet presence, I'd say, you know, back on the MySpace days and things like that, it was so easy to contact other creative people and do things together. Mm-hmm. And because of that, we were on a lot of compilations. We were represented in a lot of different ways that we nowadays we probably wouldn't, because it's just so saturated and there's so many bands doing it. But because of that, we still, even during our hiatus, we would still have people finding us through Facebook or Bandcamp, or and asking to buy our album, asking if we had any merch left around, and getting in contact with us. And then after the pandemic, and I just got really back into playing guitar and music and gear, somehow gear. I wasn't playing, but I got really into gear. And then I started talking to the guys, and, you know, there's a group chat going, and I'm trying to write a song every day, and just like push myself to keep writing, and I'm sending it to them. And then like at one point, I'm pretty sure, it was the drummer that was just like, what are we doing here? Like, well, like what's happening? And it was like, so we, you know, it's like, let's get in a room and just see how it feels.
Cool.
And that's what we did. We got in a room, we played the set. Honestly, we still all knew it like pretty well. And then it was just like, we had to have a serious conversation about our expectations, right, and definitions of success and goals and rules and, you know, guidelines, because we all have families and lives, and we have to, right, respect that amongst each other. If we didn't respect that, then it wouldn't last very long.
Right.
But yeah, so that's how it happened. We kept getting contacted through people seemed interested in it, and we were interested in playing it again. And I was writing, and it just seemed like a natural thing to come back to.
Cool.
Yeah.
When you were younger in the first incarnation of the band, the first iteration, mm-hmm. were you like many other musicians, young musicians, where you thought, okay, we're going to do a record and someone's going to dig it and we're all going to move to California or all going to get Lamborghinis or we're going to be big stars? Was that the early objective?
The early objective to me was always recording. I just wanted to make, I just wanted to hear my songs like I heard other people's songs. Mm-hmm. And I think deep down there was, when you're young, there's always a little part of you that's like, I'm going to get famous and this is what I'm going to do. And we, you know, at one point we had a van and we were, you know, playing all the time, and all of our buddies who were also that age were like coming out. And, you know, it felt right. But like, I never liked playing shows when I was younger. To me, it was all about recording but yeah, I definitely thought every piece of you thinks is that you're going to get famous, you know, when you're younger. And you're just like, well, if I just keep doing it long enough, somebody's going to like what I do.
And now, is there any tiny, tiny part of you that thinks the same? We could have a record that could wind up on a song that could wind up on a soundtrack or on a video game. Something could happen where this could become something more than something we occasionally do as middle-aged men.
There's always a little part of you that hopes, right?
Yeah.
You have to. If there wasn't that part, then you wouldn't do it. I mean, I love the little stuff. I love the little things about writing and recording and producing and all that stuff. But you always hope. There's always that little bit that's like, well, if I just get in front of the right person, or if the right person hears this, that, you know, it could happen. You know, it could happen, whatever that means.
How do you know that your songs are good enough, right? Because part of it is people give you feedback. I really like this song. This song was just okay, or whatever, right? But how do you know, if you're a guy that writes a lot of songs, how do you know what sounds good?
That's a great question. I think there is a inherent thing in everyone that speaks to them. So what sounds good to one person might not sound good to another person.
Right.
The difference is that there are people in higher ups that have more trust in their opinion. Mm-hmm. I think Rick Rubin said that about, like, you know, he's just a guy. He has no high school, or he has like no college diploma. He's none of that. People just trusted his taste. Okay. And like, that's how he got to where he got. Cause when he said something was good, he was right like one time. And then the next person said, okay, he knows what's good. And then that just kept snowballing.
Right.
So you just have to kind of trust that what you like is good, and that there's somebody else out there that will also agree that that's good. I truly believe that every band has a market. I shouldn't say market. Every band has a fan base. They just have to get to them.
Right. They have to figure out. And that's hard. And we'll talk about this at the very end. This is something I talk about on the show a lot. It's hard to get in front of people. It's hard to get ears on music in the current age. Let's talk about, I want to in particular talk about the song Ready to Die. It showed up on the 2011 album. You re-released it in 2023. And what I want to say about that song is it is insanely catchy. Just crazy. Like this, like talking about hit songs, when I heard that, I was like, oh my God, this song should be on 1,000 video game soundtracks. And I don't know why it isn't, right? So something like that, why did you put it on an album, re-release it in 2023? Mostly, my guess is you still think it's representative of what you're doing.
So it is. It was the song that kind of changed how we look at our identity. That was the first song that I wrote that wasn't like about a horror movie or something like that, you know? And it was the first song that we said like, oh, like this works like this. Mm-hmm. It's us, but it's also not, but it also shows, it's kind of like that, what I said earlier about being vulnerable. Like that was very vulnerable. Mm-hmm. So in that moment, it was a great song. It's very catchy, like you said. And when we were recording our first album, that was the song that we sent to, we were on a label called Robot Monster Records out of Seattle for a short period of time. And that was the song that I sent to them. And they were like, okay, you're on. Like, so it's always been one of our favorites. And after that hiatus and everything, we wanted to put out a new song, something that sounded more modern, because, you know, when you don't play a song for 10 years and then you try to message people about listening to your album, it's probably not going to go over the best. So our goal was to re-record one song off of our old album. And that was the one, because it's always been a staple. Yeah. I think we'll always play it. I think it's gotten better over time somehow. And I think just people connect with it because everyone's had a dark day, you know?
Yeah. When I first heard your stuff, I immediately thought, okay, Lagwagon, maybe some Vandals in there. That sort of not quite power pop, like more, there's something more robust than a simple Blink-182 song. There's something more happening there. And in particular, your vocals, because you're the lead vocalist as well, has some of that like Northern California punk energy to it. Any influences there when you first started out and tried to figure out how to get your writing style together?
So that, you're the second person this year to say Vandals.
Okay.
And I've never listened to a Vandal song in my life.
The Vandals are real good. You should check them out.
Yeah, I might like them. My musical taste, and it's kind of become like an internet meme at this point, but my musical taste completely stems from Tony Hawk Pro Skater soundtracks.
Okay, yeah.
So there's a lot of punk on there, a lot of punk from all over. When I was listening to music is how I learned to write music. I'm not a musician. I wouldn't say that I am. I'd say I know how to write songs and I know what works and I know enough to write songs. But my biggest influences have always been Alkaline Trio.
Okay.
Blitzkid is a huge influence to us. They did the horror punk thing, but on their own terms, and they're incredible. But yeah, it's interesting. So this year, another person said Vandals and Screeching Weasel.
Okay.
And I was like, never listened to either of them. but I loved Blink-182. So I think it's one of those osmosis, like they were, you know, they were inspired by them. And then I was inspired by Blink-182. So it's just kind of like trickle down effect, to me.
Yeah.
Also gotten The Offspring.
I don't hear that. Again, I think I'm thinking mostly about how fundamentally sound the songs are, right? They're fast, obviously, but they're so solid all the way through and they're well recorded. And maybe it is a lot of your voice doesn't remind me of some of that other stuff you're mentioning. Let's talk about this. This is Dying. You just put this out in December 2023. Three songs. They Won't Stay Dead, November, Carnival of Souls. I think They Won't Stay Dead is really, really good. It harkens to me. It reminds me a lot of Ready to Die. I was reading that some people really like Carnival of Souls as well as another very good and catchy song. Why three songs? Why the end of last year? Why all of it?
Wow. Okay. Let's get into it. So when we got back together, I told you we had like a round table discussion of like expectations, goals, what we wanted. I said, I'm back in, but I want to record a second album. And, both of those guys said, I'm back in, but I want to play shows. Okay. And I said, okay, if you make me play shows, then I'm going to make you record an album. So that was kind of our give and take, because again, that's what I've always wanted to do, is just record music.
Right.
So we started working on, what would be a second album, and we kind of went back to the well and picked out a couple of songs that were that predate the hiatus. They Won't Stay Dead was actually one of the very first songs I ever started writing for the band back in 2005.
Okay.
It meant a lot to me because Night of the Living Dead is my favorite horror movie of all time. That's what that song's about. And I wanted to get it perfect. So it just took a long time to get it right.
Mm-hmm.
November was an old song that just kind of got rewritten for this. It was a fast punk song, straightforward, very similar to They Won't Stay Dead and Carnival, but we redid the... I wrote some music and I just used those lyrics and it worked great. I think it's really good for the middle track of that EP, a little palate cleanser between the two. And Carnival of Souls is also a very old song pre-hiatus that my drummer really loved and has been pushing to record and write and play for years. And I've just been lukewarm on it. But now I really love it. We finally got it to a point where I feel like it's a complete song. Those three songs were the EP because we feel as though they were ready to go and we feel as though they don't fit towards the new songs that we've written since we've been back together.
Okay.
December, and then we were talking about how are we going to do it? We should do it like this. We should do it like that. And every week we got together, the plan would change. Yeah. So then we got offered to do a beer collaboration with a brewery in York, PA called Collusion Tap Works. It was going to be a part of the event that happens in York called Fang Around that's hosted by the Dark Parlor. And so we had this big show. We had this beer collaboration coming up. And we just said, okay, that's the date. That's the day that the EP is going to come out.
Cool. Yeah.
We started booking stuff for it before we ever walked into the studio. We were booking like podcasts and all kinds of stuff, trying to like let people know it wasn't even recorded. We didn't have any artwork. We didn't have anything done. We just said, that's the date and it's happening. Great. So then we booked 2 days in the studio. We went in, we did all three songs and we got all the merch cause we did a whole merch drop and everything about 2 days before the event. Nice. And it was a surprise release. We just did it that morning cause we were like, well, just in case something goes wrong, we're not gonna, cheese it. But yeah, so that it was kind of our proof of concept for what will be the next album. It was songs that we enjoyed, we want to play, we want them in the world, but we wanted to see what that would be like, what releasing music in 2023 would have been like.
Right. Hmm. And as I mentioned, there's a ton of challenges that go along with being in the arts in 2024, not the least of which is the perils of social media, trying to get in front of people, trying to let people know that you have stuff without having to deal with the algorithm, which unfortunately everyone has to do. So what is success for Horrorwood Ending right now? What does that look like for you guys?
We had this discussion actually this weekend because I think we like to have that discussion every once in a while, you know, just like what's success next?
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're just at a point where, like you said earlier, like no one's getting rich off of this.
Mm-hmm.
But something we take pride in is that we make sure that the band pays for itself.
Mm-hmm.
All money that comes in goes right into the pot. And if we want to do something, if it's not in the pot, then it's not getting done. We played 15 shows last year in 2023, and all the money from that and merch is what paid for our release. So right now, success is finding people that enjoy our music and enjoying making it. and not having to run ourselves dry trying to do this mm-hmm. thing that should be for pleasure.
Right.
I think a lot of bands get burnt out because music takes a lot out of you. And I feel like the financial burden is like the thing that happens first. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're in a right. band, there's so many little expenses that people don't think about. Just going to shows, getting back and forth from shows, having to have merch, having containers to put merch in, having like, it's just dumb stuff that adds up. That having that constant thing nagging at you is just like, oh, I got to go do that thing that's costing me all this money. And, and it's taken up my Sunday. And, you know, success is like enjoyment. And we try and do everything we can that, to make this more enjoyable.
Ryan, I want to point out that 15 shows in 1 year is a lot of shows for a guy that doesn't want to play shows.
Dude, I'm telling you, I hate shows. I'm just kidding. I don't hate shows anymore. It was one of those things where, you know, when I'm younger, I had more anxiety about it.
Yeah.
And I just felt like, and I still feel this way, but you just feel like you never play well enough. Yeah. It's, you can come off stage and 100 people are standing in line to say, hey, good job. And you're still like, yeah, but that one note I missed, like, or I forgot to ring out that chord, or, you know, you're always, I'm the worst at that. But we had a show on last Friday with the Mad Splatter, who we're going to be both playing with coming up. And someone texted me beforehand to say, like, hey, have a good show. And I was like, I've never had one of those, but I'll do my best. Like,
so as you mentioned, coming up on April 19th, so that'll be 2 weeks more or less from when this episode comes out. You can come see Horrorwood Ending at the venerable and aromatic 222 Ormsby, and you can heckle Ryan in an effort to try to rattle him on stage into making
some. It won't take much.
The new EP is called So This Is Dying. It came out at the end of 2023. It's real good. You should check it out. You should come out and see them when they're in Pittsburgh, if you're in the Pittsburgh area. I want to thank everyone who's listening and supporting the podcast. I want to thank you for your support, as always. Thanks to Ryan and Horrorwood Ending for coming on the show, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.